Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting items from the current month's previews catalog. This is part two of Preview Spotlight number 148 for the February 2020 previews. Now, normally in this episode, we'd be going over some of the items and previews you might find interesting. These episodes have an open submission policy, and I encourage you to send in clips to help promote the comics you love as often as you can. Now, there are thousands of items and previews each and every month, and it's easy for things to get lost in the shuffle. Usually, we start at the beginning of previews and work our way to the back. Obviously, we don't go item by item, or page by page, or even publisher by publisher. We just hit the highlights as picked by listeners like you. But this month, I needed to get the episode done early, so we changed up the format for this month. Each person could send in a single clip recommending any number of things, past, present, or even future. No need for previews, just talk about the comics you think others should check out. Now, because of the earlier deadline, there weren't as many submissions as usual, but the submissions we got were both longer and covered a lot more comics than usual, so you should still find plenty of things that you haven't read that you might love. In part one, I've played all the listener clips, and then when I had recorded mine, I realized I went really long. So I figured I'd do it as a part two episode. So that's what you're going to get now. Here's what I've already recorded on what I think you guys might want to check out. Each person took the very loose criteria I had of just recommend comics, essentially, in a little bit of a different direction, which is part of the fun of doing these kinds of episodes where we shake up the format a little bit. Now, I'll be honest, when I had put together that, hey, recommend anything kind of criteria, I really had no game plan for what I was going to recommend. And then, of course, it came time for me to actually sit here and record, so I did give it a little bit of thought, and what I did is went through the condensed inventory of my entire collection, where I've got just a line item per title with what issues I've got and stuff. And that thing is like, I don't know, 9,000 line long text file, give or take. And I just went through and just started deleting stuff until I hit something of, oh yeah, that was kind of cool, people should check that out. And just kind of cherry pick stuff. Now, I'm sure if I were to do that exercise again, I'd come up with some of the same items. Some of the stuff might not make the cut. Other stuff might make the cut. It just, you know, it depends what hits me at the time. So what I'm going to do is I'm just kind of blast through these things and tell you about some stuff that I have fond memories of and are worth checking out. Now, I'm not going to go into too much detail about the specific properties and stuff like that. This is just more of a something for you to be thinking about and maybe do a little research on your own. As far as finding these things, some of these things have been collected in trades, some of them have not. However, in this day and age of online back issue dealers like MyComicShop.com, finding back issues isn't that hard. Plus, with the Marvel Comics digital program, with the DC Universe streaming digital comics program and stuff, from those publishers, you can get a lot of this stuff fairly easily online for your monthly subscription fee, which is only, you know, what, $5, $6 or something a month, which isn't too bad. But it comes down to knowing what to go look for. That's what I'm going to try to help you out with here. So this is going to be in a basically alphabetical order. There may be a few things that are out of order because I, one, wasn't too organized when I put the list together, and two, a couple of things hit me. So I've got a couple of things that are a little more creator-centric at the end and one topic-centric thing versus, you know, title-centric or whatever. But starting up in the A's, the first thing I hit that it's like, yeah, you know, I'd love to reread it. It started off great and it was a really long run. That's the original run of Alpha Flight from 1983. That thing went for 130 issues, the first two dozen of which were done by John Byrne in almost a non-team approach where he'd focus on the different members. And you didn't always see all of Alpha Flight together. But the story really all came together, both with the 12th issue and then again a year later with the 24th. He had a game plan. He knew what he was doing. It was some great stuff. Now, the next title is one that I've talked about a lot, highly recommended if you're into the superhero genre at all, and that's Astro City. And this thing has been going on since 1995, I believe, when it first started with the Homage line over at Image. It then moved over to the homage line over at DC when Wildstorm became part of DC, etc. But this thing's been going on for, geez, I don't know, 100 issues or something like that. It is some of Kurt Busiek's best work. It's a different look at the superhero genre and kind of the classic DC Marvel type of universe. It's not always as action-packed. Sometimes it's a lot more character-based, and you see the sort of characters that you just don't focus on in a title starring, you know, Superman or the Fantastic Four, the Avengers, the Justice League, or whomever. So you get a different angle on the superhero genre. It's a ton of fun. It's just a great, great title, and one that I do think everybody ought to check out. Another one that's a lot of fun, that's lesser known, is the Arion Lord of Atlantis title from 1982 from DC. This was basically a sword and sorcery title set in ancient Atlantis back in pre-crisis DC. It ran for 35 issues plus a special. Some of the characters have been seen since, specifically Arion. But this was, for my money, just during the heyday of DC in the early 80s. Great title, a lot of fun. I don't know if they've collected this or not, but it's just got some great art, some great story, and is worth checking out. Now, something from a more recent vintage from Red 5 Comics is Atomic Robo. Now, it's since moved over to IDW, but this is a tech-based science adventure story featuring Atomic Robo, who's a sentient robot created by Nikola Tesla, I believe. It's done as a series of mini-series, and there are, geez, maybe, I don't know, a dozen of them or something? There's just a ton of them. Usually they're about 4 or 5 issues long, easy reads. They've all been collected in trade. Really recommend this stuff. It's a lot of fun. I'd start at the beginning. You don't have to. You can really jump in at any point. Each series is self-contained, even if it may have some references to some past stuff. It's accessible, and it's definitely worth checking out if you want kind of a humorous sci-fi kind of a book. Another one worth checking out is Avengers Forever. This has absolutely been collected into trade. This is Kurt Busiek basically taking a look at the Avengers, kind of an across-time team. Great fun, 12-issue story, classic, well worth checking out. Now, another run that went on for quite some time over at DC that has had some major ramifications, both in comics and outside of comics, is the original Birds of Prey run that started in 1999. Went for, I think, 127 issues, and it teamed up Barbara Gordon as, really at one point, as Batgirl, but mainly as Oracle, along with Black Canary, Huntress, and a number of other characters over the years. There was a TV show based on this in the early 2000s. The Green Arrow and the Canaries potential spinoff from Arrow is very much along these lines. We saw aspects of this sort of a thing touched on in Smallville and in some other places, including some of the movies such as the Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey. It's, I believe, out now, although I really haven't kept up with the movies as to when what's coming out. Anyways, classic run. Chuck Dixon did some of the writing. Great stuff, both in terms of story and art, well worth checking out. Now, something else that's worth checking out, and I'm trying to stay away from the obvious stuff, you know, like Batman and Superman and stuff, but two Batman titles I want to call out, and that's Batman Eternal and Batman and Robin Eternal. These were weekly titles. Batman Eternal went for, I think, a full year, 52 issues. Batman and Robin Eternal only went for half a year for 26 issues, I believe. These are done in 2014, 2015, but a lot of pivotal stuff for the Batman characters kind of happened at that point, and it was just a lot of fun, great stuff, and just that weekly release, they really kept up the story momentum. Now, diving a bit further back into DC, to some post-crisis stuff that was a lot of fun. Back in 1986, there was the 25-issue run of Booster Gold that introduced that character by Dan Jurgens. He did just some great stuff on the story and art, and it's basically, what if you've got a sports star from the future who's disgraced because he was basically betting on the games and shouldn't have been, who winds up, you know, struggling, working as a museum guard, and well, guess what? It's the Science Museum. They've got a bunch of tech that could allow somebody to both become a superhero and travel in time. So he steals the stuff, travels in time, and becomes a superhero in the modern age. And it pokes a little bit of fun at the superhero genre, but not in an offensive way or whatever. It's just, what if you've got somebody that's maybe a little too capitalistic for their own good? And it's a bit of a redemption arc for the character of him pretending to be a hero and then actually becoming a hero. So it was some great stuff, well worth checking out, and obviously the character's stuck around since. Now, one of my favorite titles from DC in terms of kind of the super spy genre was the original run of Checkmate from 1988. This ran for 33 issues, and it was really DC's first serious kind of successful run to something similar to S.H.I.E.L.D. over at Marvel. Checkmate was a spy organization. It had a chess motif. You had the knights who were the field agents, the pawns who were kind of their helpers and stuff, gathering intel and coordinating equipment and stuff. And it was just some fun stuff, some cool character designs for the knights and stuff, and a really interesting take on what a spy super agent sort of organization would look like in a superhero universe. Now, one title I gotta mention because it was really the first big crossover kind of a storyline, even though it was all self-contained in this miniseries. It's the 3-issue Contest of Champions miniseries from 1982. This was where the various major Marvel characters were gathered up by the Game Master, and I forget who he was going up against, but it was basically they were split into 2 teams. They were going after these slices of this mystic orb or whatever, and it was a little cheesy, a little, you know, put them through the motions and you know, square them off for different challenges and stuff. But it is the precursor to things like Secret Wars, Crisis on Infinite Earths, and all that kind of stuff that we've gotten today. So if you want to see a first kind of gathering of the heroes for this big epic story or whatnot, that's the place to go, and I think it holds up today. Now, speaking of those kinds of crossovers and stuff like that, and since we're in the C area of the alphabet, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Crisis on Infinite Earths. This changed the DC universe like no story before or after, or really, I think, ever in the future. It was a pivotal, fundamental change to everything DC had published before and has had ramifications on everything after, whether the creators even realized that or not. 12-issue series, it's been collected, it's been put into an absolute, it's well worth checking out. They just did the crossover version of it on the CW and stuff. You can see where they were pulling references from it. You could see where they had to tweak stuff to fit their continuity. But if you are into DC superheroes at all and you want to see that bigger picture, it's worth reading just for the epic size and scope. And it's one of, I think, the best things that Marv Wolfman and George Perez ever did. And they've done some amazing stuff over the years before and after that, too. Now, in addition to Crisis on Infinite Earths, I want to mention a collection of trade paperbacks. Now, all the things that are collected in here are also available on the DC Universe streaming service. But this is the Crisis on Multiple Earths trade paperback series, of which there are 6 volumes. 7 if you're in Europe. I wish they'd bring that one over to the US and do it in English. And the 2 issues of the Crisis on Multiple Earth team-ups, and basically what these things do, the Crisis on Multiple Earths starts with, I believe, the first JLA-JSA crossover in Justice League of America 21 and 22, I think it was, and just collects everyone after that. And if you want to get up to speed on a lot of the major teams and characters and whatnot of the pre-Crisis DC universe, going through this collection of trades is, I think, the way to do it. At some point, I'd love to do some back issue spotlights on these. It's just a matter of finding the time. But I love the JLA-JSA team-ups, and these things were just a highlight of every year when they were coming out. And then the team-ups is when they would team up various characters outside of the JLA-JSA team-ups from the different Earths. So that gives you a lot more Earth 1, Earth 2 type stuff. I'm trying to think if they collect other stuff. I'd have to go look up and check that out. Anyways, that's just a lot of fun and worth reading. And if you're really into this kind of Crisis stuff, I really enjoyed Infinite Crisis as well. That too has obviously been collected into a hardcover or trade paperback. So, as a matter of fact, I've got the hardcover, I've got the trade, I've got 2 copies of each issue of Infinite Crisis. So fun stuff, and it's something that carried the torch from Crisis on Infinite Earths and really restructured the DC Universe and Multiverse back in 2005, so, you know, 20 years after the original Crisis. Now, while I'm talking about this stuff, I'd be remiss if I also didn't mention some other classic DC team-up titles, specifically The Brave and the Bold, where you got Batman teaming up with something, somebody, you know, it wasn't originally that way, but after around issue, I don't know, 115, 120 or something, that's what the title was. It's just Batman teaming up with somebody every month. And really, when you get to the later few dozen issues, it ended at issue 200, they just had some classic stuff that was a ton of fun and really great reads, very enjoyable. And then, of course, the other classic DC team-up title that's got to get mentioned is DC Comics Presents, which went for a 97-issue run. Man, I wish they'd took it another 3 issues just to hit that 100. But it was Superman teaming up with somebody every week, or not every week, every month. It's also where they did the original 16-page bonus feature introducing the new Teen Titans in issue, I want to say 26, but I could be off by a few issues. Anyways, classic DC teaming up Superman with somebody every month. Great fun. Over on the Marvel side, Marvel 2-in-1 ran 100 issues with The Thing, and then Marvel Team-Up originally ran 150 issues with Spider-Man. Those are some of the classic team-up titles over there. And getting back into kind of that alphabetical flow, this time I'm going to use it for the publisher. CrossGen, I think, is a publisher that had a really good run of titles in the early 2000s. A couple I want to call out, specifically Ruse and Sojourn, but a lot of their titles like Way of the Rat and some of the others are a ton of fun, worth checking out, and they did a lot of stuff that I think a lot of people have just kind of forgotten about. So if you're ever in a comic shop and you see a collection of some of the early CrossGen trades, flip through them, see what you think. They had just some great talent on there, both in terms of the writing and the art, and did just some great storytelling. Now, in the D area of the alphabet, and yeah, I got a lot of these, one of the lesser-known things from the 80s over from Eclipse is DN Agents. This was, I believe, Mark Evanier on the writing, and I'm blanking on who was the artist. Ran for 24 issues. It was an independent book on basically genetically created superheroes. Had some fun stuff. They did a non-crossover crossover with the New Teen Titans at one point. That was a bunch of fun. Each title had kind of a riff on the other team, and it wasn't an official crossover, but it was pretty clear what was going on. Definitely think that's worth checking out, that title, if you can find it. Now, the next thing I'm going to put here in the D's, because I got it listed there, but it could also fall under the L's. D for Don Rosa for the collected editions and the artist editions, but under its proper name of L for Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck. This is one of the classic Scrooge McDuck storylines, and it's you know, as a kid, I was into comics, and when my uncle would come over from Japan, he would always talk about having been into comics when he was a kid, but I was into superhero comics, he was more into the Disney ducks. And, you know, as a kid, I didn't really, you know, think much about it, but later in life, I actually checked out some of the classic Duck stuff by Don Rosa, Carl Barks, and others. And again, Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck is like one of the hallmark titles, runs or stories there or whatever. At that point, I really kind of got what he was seeing in that stuff, and I've been reading Scrooge McDuck ever since. So definitely worth checking out. It is a bit of a denser storytelling style. I've got a back issue spotlight covering the Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck. Again, check it out. Well worth your time. Now, finishing off the titles I pulled out in the D's is DP7. Now, this is one of the original New Universe titles, and really not one that a lot of people kind of talk about or check out, but man, for my money, it was one of the best. Now, the New Universe was kind of doing a real-time progression, so the characters would age a little bit. It ran for 32 issues, and it was kind of their version of the X-Men. It's not a superhero universe, it's kind of the world outside your window, I believe is how they phrased it. So if you think you've got powers, you're pretty much committed to an asylum. And this is taking place in that, starting out in that asylum, as these people realize they really do have powers and escape and try to be heroic and try to do the right thing. It's a ton of fun, had some really different kind of characters and powers and stuff. I thought it was very imaginative. One or two of my favorite characters in comics come from that title. definitely worth checking out. Now, in the ease from Kamiko or Comico or however you want to pronounce that defunct publisher's name, Elementals. Now, this is Bill Willingham early on, I believe. 1984, it went for 29 issues, came back for a 26-issue run in 89, a 3-issue run in 95, you know, a bunch of stuff. Basically, it is four people with elemental powers, earth, wind, fire, and rock, or earth, wind, fire, and air. Sorry, that's the fourth. I'll get it right one of these days. A lot of fun, a little edgy at times, a little risque at times, but well-written stuff. And really showed kind of what independent comics could do in the 80s and such. Very, very good stuff. Now, more recently, showing off what can be done in independent comics over from Image was Elephant Men. Now, that started in, I want to say, 2003 with Hip Flask. But then, actually, you know, the Elephant Men title itself ran for 80 issues, just finished a year or two back. Well worth checking all that stuff out. Has just some phenomenal writing and some amazing art over the years. Definitely, if you are at a convention where Richard Starkings and Comic Craft are, they'll have copies because Richard Starking is the guy who wrote and created Elephant Men. Definitely worth checking out. Now, another title that went for a 150-issue run ending not all that many years ago, starting in 2002, was Fables. This was from Vertigo. It was basically what if all those characters from Fables were real and existed and were kind of hiding out in a apartment building or whatever in New York as they had escaped the Fable Lands. This is something that the overall story arc that played out in the trade-sized issue 150, a lot of those seeds have been planted in that first issue organically and just kind of grew and grew. Some amazing storytelling by Bill Willingham and friends. Definitely worth checking out. Classic stuff. Now, my next pick is a little unusual because it is 3 issues of what was going to be a 6-issue run, but it got cut short. And normally I would discount it based on that, but Family Dynamic from the Johnny DC line in 2008 was essentially almost a Saturday morning superhero kind of comics feel to it in all of the right ways. You had some characters that were kind of analogs to the Batman and Robin type. You had some that were analogs to the Fantastic Four and Superman. It was everything I think an all-ages comic should and could be. Man, I wish they could bring this back and continue with it. It was just some great stuff. Now, I heard at one point they were doing like a crowdfunding campaign or something like that. I just haven't been able to chase it down and find it. If anyone knows where I can get any more of this Family Dynamic content beyond these first 3 issues from Johnny DC in 2008, let me know because I'd love to check that out. Now, I talked a little before about weekly comics. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the classic hallmark of that, which is 52 from DC in 2006. It ran for 52 issues, and it basically filled a gap during the 1 year later period of DC of what happened during that year. We get some great stories with Black Adam, with Booster Gold, with Elongated Man, with, I'm trying to think who some of the other featured characters were. It was just some great stuff. Had some you know, fails here and there in the story or whatever. Not a perfect execution, but surprisingly good for the first weekly run, juggling 4 writers and a ton of characters and hitting their you know, release date every week. I've done some episodes on this. If you look through the archives, you can definitely find out a lot more about what I think of 52. Definitely worth reading. Now, this next character really has 2 titles that I'll talk about, one from 1978 and the other from 1982, and that's Firestorm and Fury of Firestorm. Love this character, great stuff. The original title of Firestorm fell victim to the DC implosion, so it only ran for 5 issues. The character then joined the Justice League, got popular enough, things got a little better, so in 1982, they launched the Fury of Firestorm, which went on to run for 100 issues. So Ronnie Raymond and Professor Stein as Firestorm, just some classic stuff, great title, highly recommend that. Again, in my mind, the early 80s of DC is just really my comfort zone, my happy place. It's what I consider to be really good comics. Now, jumping more recently to 2011, and this may be a little bit of a controversial one, but I'm picking it for a reason, and that's Flashpoint, the five-issue series, and kind of the surrounding, I don't know, 18 or 19 titles that were, you know, two, 3 issues apiece. Flashpoint was what bridged the gap between the pre-Flashpoint universe and the post-Flashpoint New 52. But in 3 months or so, they fully explored this universe and fleshed it out to an insane degree that really set my expectations for the New 52, which the New 52 kind of failed to meet. They just took some characters in some very different directions. A few of these things have continued to have ramifications afterwards, particularly the take they did on Shazam really colored what they did with the character afterwards. It's some fun stuff. It's clearly self-contained and a good experiment as to how quickly you can flesh out a universe if you've kind of got a game plan going in and know the universe you're going to flesh out. So worth checking out with some caveats, though. Now, there was a recent mini-series that just concluded from DC called The Freedom Fighters. I'm not going to recommend that, although it's a great read. I'm going to recommend the one from 1976, which takes place on Earth-X with the classic Freedom Fighters, ran for 15 issues. I believe there's a collection that has issues 16 and 17, which had previously only seen print in the canceled Comics Cavalcade, I believe. But this was Uncle Sam, the Human Bomb, Black Condor, Dollman, Firebrand, maybe. I'm trying to think who the other characters were. Classic stuff. Essentially DC's version of the Invaders. Or you could argue the Invaders is DC's version of the Freedom Fighters. Although there's chicken and egg sort of situation, so I think the Invaders are the original. Anyways, dystopic, you know, a world where World War II did not go the way it went here, and these are the heroes kind of fighting for freedom. Definitely worth checking out. Now, from 2016 is the 12-issue run of Future Quest. And man, DC took some of the classic Hanna-Barbera sci-fi kind of cartoon characters from Saturday morning, retooled them slightly, and had this really cohesive world they were building of these characters. Space Ghost, the Herculoids, Frankenstein Jr., The Impossibles. I'm trying to think who else. Johnny Quest. It was some great stuff. Only ran for 12 issues. I really think they should have done more with this approach, these characters. But it's definitely worth checking out. It was some fun reads when it came out. And if you like those original characters from the Saturday morning cartoons and want to see a more modern take, but still capturing the tone and style of those original characters and recognizable as them, definitely worth checking out Future Quest. Now, in 2014, on the heels of Forever Evil, the Nightwing title had been canceled, ended, and replaced with Grayson. This went for about 20 issues, I think 3 annuals, and maybe a Future's End special or something. It was basically Dick Grayson as a super spy agent of Spiral. It had some phenomenal art by, I think, Michael Janin, and just was a great read, ton of fun. And I'll be honest, I went in skeptical of, you know, I like Nightwing as a superhero, is this going to work? It did. If they were going to bring back a super spy organization, I would like to see Dick Grayson as a member emeritus of it, where he can basically go and have adventures there, but is still Nightwing the superhero, etc., etc. Or not still, but would be back as. Anyways, Grayson, 2014, been collected, worth checking out. My next pick encompasses titles from 1982 to 2017-ish, maybe? Thereabouts. Anyways, it covers many, many decades. It's Gru the Wanderer by Sergio Aragonés, Mark Evanier with Stan Sakai, and Tom Luth helping out with, I think, letters and coloring, maybe. Anyways, classic stuff of Gru the Wanderer. Imagine if you had kind of a cartoony Conan the Barbarian who was just a complete and utter imbecile, but, you know, tried to do right in the world. And the commentary that you get in some of these things is just great stuff. There's some cheesy humor and whatnot. It runs the gambit from silliness to some really amazing writing on the rhyming and stuff like that with the bard and whatnot, to some good insights as to, you know, politics, the nature of man, and stuff like that. If you've never checked out Gru the Wanderer, I think you should. As to where to jump in, a little harder to say, but man, there's tons of it out there, and it's worth checking out. It's consistent in quality over those decades. Fun stuff, definitely different from most of the rest of the stuff that I've read and what's the other stuff on this list. Okay, next up is Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm going to pick the 1994 run that went for 62 issues, primarily by Jim Valentino. It was, I'm going to call it the Star Trek The Next Generation take on the characters. It takes place in the 30th century, and they are on this starship. They're looking for, I think, Captain America's shield at one point. And it's the classic version of the characters. We get some new members over the issues over the years. And ton of fun. And good spacefaring kind of cosmic stuff. If you liked what Abnett and Lanning did with the cosmic stuff, this is the sort of a thing you will like. It is the precursor to it. And takes place in a different time frame with some different characters. But man, fun stuff. Definitely recommend it. Now, obviously, a lot of what I've picked is Marvel, DC. I have ventured into a few other publishers with the indies and stuff like that, and that's where I'm going to go now. Now, not from the current Valiant, but from the original one back in the 90s. Hardcore, the Harbinger Active Resistance Division, I think it was. This ran for about 30 issues, and these were the guys who had tech implants that allowed them to mimic powers of the Harbingers, which is that world's metahumans or mutants or, you know, whatever you want to call the powered individuals. And I just thought it was a great idea from kind of, you know, here are these military guys having to use really special weapons and tactics, and just the, okay, you've got to call back to your you know, person in the chair or whatever, you know, back at the command center to have them switch out the powers for you. It's not like you could do that on the fly. But if you worked with that person, your co-pilot, so to speak, and you knew the power sequences you want to use, you could really get into a rhythm and do some cool stuff. And part of it was, as they encountered new Harbingers, they'd, you know, scan the powers or whatever so they could tap into those later. Fun series, and one of the high points of the original Valiant stuff for me. Now, more recently, as in 2019, the series just finished Harleen, 3-issue run. I've talked a lot about that recently on the Weekly Comic Spotlight and stuff. For my money, the best thing out of the Black Label, and one of the best things Stepan Sage has done in recent years. And the guy has done a ton of stuff. He's crazy talented as an artist, and he really showed how amazing of a writer he was with this title. Which he's done on other titles, but to see it done on a corporate-owned property where he didn't own it and didn't have, you know, kind of complete and utter free reign, I was impressed. Because it's one thing to just, you know, indulge your creative vision and whatnot. It's another thing to be able to tell a really pivotal, defining story for a character that's been around for a few decades that came out of somebody else's mind. Now, the next titles I'm going to mention spanned from, I think, 2012 into 2018, 19. It's Injustice Gods Among Us, Injustice Year 2, Injustice Year 3, Injustice Year 4, Injustice Year 5, Injustice Ground Zero, and Injustice 2. This covers, geez, dozens and dozens of issues. All said and done, maybe around 100. I don't know, I haven't added it up. I had originally kind of just dismissed this sight unseen as, oh, it's a video game thing. But then I had realized at that time they were doing stuff at DC on video game stuff that was actually really good. Okay, I'll check this out. And this is what put Tom Taylor really on the map, I think. He took a iconic, classic kind of DC universe that was a little bit pre-crisis, a little bit current day, and just nudged the characters a little bit. Certain things happened, and it pushed the boundaries on what some of these characters would and wouldn't do, to the point that you've, down the line, got Superman having taken over the Earth as a dictator, and you're like, yeah, that's what he would have done given these events. It was some amazing writing. It was a very different take on the mainstream DC universe in the self-contained title, or series of titles, I should say. It had continuity, It had some great storytelling, some great character moments. I think one of the better superhero comics done in the last few decade or so. Now, speaking of good superhero comics done, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Invincible, which went for, I think, 144-issue run by Robert Kirkman over at Image. It did some other stuff that was just game-changing that you couldn't do in a shared universe, and it never quite caught on to the extent that Walking Dead did, but it's one of Kirkman's other kind of major masterpieces and worth checking out. Now, one of the few and maybe the only original graphic novels I have on this list is JLA Earth 2 from the year 2000 in DC. It was a hardcover. It reintroduced the crime syndicate in the then current continuity of the DC universe. Love the crime syndicate, so hard to go wrong with that. Now, going back about a year earlier to 1999 is when Geoff Johns started his classic run on JSA. JSA, of course, being short for the Justice Society of America. This ran for 87 issues and took the classic Golden Age characters of DC that formerly had been on Earth 2, more on that later, and he just really revitalized them and did some great stuff. This is where we got some really character-defining moments with Black Adam and some of the other lesser-used JSA characters. They had some amazing art over the years from, let's see, Paul Kirk, Dale Eaglesham. At one point, Alex Ross is doing a bunch of covers for them, some character designs. It really took the concept of legacy hero to a whole new level. Brilliant stuff. Definitely recommend it. Now, if I'm going to recommend JSA, I'd be remiss if I didn't recommend the Justice League of America's original volume starting in 1960. I got on board with that somewhere around issue 170-ish off the rack. I've since pushed my collection all the way back to, I think, issue 117 with a bunch of scattered issues before that. I tend not to chase back issues, so at some point I may fill those gaps, I may not. It's just not an urgent issue for me. The entire run's available on the DC Universe streaming service last I checked. And, man, the satellite era of the JSA is, again, that sweet spot for me of the DC Universe. Definitely recommend that. And, of course, I love the JLA-JSA crossovers that happened in that book over the years. Now, having mentioned the JSA and the JLA, I'm going to switch to an independent series of titles and publishers and recommend The Justice Machine. Now, this started in 1981 from Noble. It went over to Texas, the publisher, in 1984, Kimiko in 1987, Innovation in 1989, Millennium in 1992. It may have even had another one in more recent vintage. It's basically a 1984 George Orwellian look at superheroes with... really, I think some classic stories and stuff over its run. And it's one that, man, if I could get my hands on any kind of property that's established to kind of take and run with, this is one I'd consider. Definitely am curious who kind of owns it now, what they're planning, if anything, to do with it. Because I think there's a lot of potential in this concept, and I loved the comics of it I've read. Now, Kingdom Come from 1996, 4-issue run, definitely collected, definitely worth reading. And Alex Ross and Mark Waid, great creative team. The Kingdom follow-on story was good, not as good, because it was, well, a follow-on story. But the Kingdom Come stuff is classic reading, and really 4 issues, so it's not hard to do. If you haven't read it, it's amazing art. And basically, what if the next generation of heroes doesn't turn out so well? You know, if it's more of an Image mindset than a, say, heroic mindset. And really, in this day and age where we've got these rumors of 5G and stuff like that, maybe it's time to reread this and see what we could get from that next generation of heroes. Now, speaking of future generations of heroes, we've hit the L, so of course I have got to mention the Legion of Superheroes. Now, for me, this is the classic original version dating back to Superboy and the Legion. I was getting that stuff off the rack when it became Legion of Superheroes, Tales of the Legion of Superheroes, and, you know, bounced through all the different titles. Hell, I'll even include the Legion period, you know, L period, E period, G period, I period, O period, N period title from 1989 and its subsequent yearly retitlings, which was a modern-day take on that concept. all of this is fun stuff. I love this group of titles. I'm happy we've got a new version back, but for me, the classic is just hard to go wrong with. I've done some back issue spotlights on some of Paul Levitt's run of the Legion, definitely one of the hallmark runs of it, but there's so many different takes on it that, you know, it's literally got decades of stories that are in its kind of own self-contained bubble of continuity for the most part. Well worth checking out, classic stuff. We've talked about Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck, but it's so good I'm going to mention it again, so there, I just did. Now, next comes Long Distance, Love and Capes. I'm just going to expand this and say anything by Tom Zoller. I have not actually read his more recent work of Warning Label. I've got that trade sitting here, just haven't gotten to it yet. But Long Distance, four-issue limited series about a long-distance relationship these two people have after, you know, bumping into each other at an airport during a long layover. And he landed the ending. It's good stuff. His classic work that got him on the radar for me was Love and Capes that he started around 2006. And I got on board with the fourth issue, I think it was, because that's what was given away for free from that publisher, from Tom, as part of Free Comic Book Day. It was a quarterly book, and he gave one of the issues out for free. It was a quarterly book, and I never had problems getting back into the story every issue. I had problems sometimes even on a weekly book because they'd start inaccessibly. Tom Zoller is a great writer. Some people may find his style a little cartoony or whatever, but it works for the material he's doing. I think he's got a great storytelling sensibility. I personally really love his art. Highly recommend basically anything he does. I've gotten most of what he does. I will admit I haven't gotten My Little Pony, but I'm okay with that. So definitely check out Tom Zoller. Now, while we're in the independence area, because that was IDW is what's got that property now, I'm going to move over to Boom Studios and really give them a shout out for what they've been doing for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers for the last couple of years. The Shattered Grid storyline itself was really kind of the crisis on Infinite Earths for the Power Ranger universe and franchise. Since then, they're expanding it by introducing the Omega Rangers, a new team of Rangers. They are building to the canon. They are staying true to the concept of the franchise. And they've really cracked the code of how to take not only a kids show, not only a live-action kids show, but also a live-action kids show based on a live-action show from another country over in Japan, or really a series of shows that are getting reworked into the American version. They've taken something that is a little hard to get your head around to begin with and made it work as basically a standard comic book superhero story. They're doing some good stuff there, and I think it's worth checking out. I'm hoping that they branch out into more of the other teams of Rangers over time. Hell, I'd love it if they just did a source book on all the Power Rangers stuff, you know, a who's who or Marvel Universe sort of a thing, you know, a Morphing Grid Guide 2. I'd love that. So, hopping back over to DC for a minute, I've mentioned the JLA, I've mentioned the JSA. I would be derelict of duty if I did not mention what was the premier superhero team of the DC Universe in the 80s, that's the New Teen Titans. Wolfman Perez, enough said, great classic stuff. This thing went for, I don't know, 100 and some odd issues all said and done. I mean, really, it gets confusing because you've got New Teen Titans, you've got Titans, you've got Teen Titans, you've got Tales of the Teen Titans, you've got tons of stuff. I love these characters. It's highly, highly recommended. Both the original run of New Teen Titans, then New Titans that goes for about 130 issues, plus a lot of the subsequent stuff. Even Teen Titans, which was a different set of characters, and some of the other Teen Titans by Dan Jurgens and whatnot, are a lot of fun. And certainly the Teen Titans run by Jeff Johns. But for me, it's the classic New Teen Titans from the 80s that is kind of the high watermark of the franchise. Now, in 1998... I was shopping at Comic Gallery in Mira Mesa. I had this guy working there named Joe. And Joe, young guy, incredibly well-read, though. What amazed me about him is, I was more or less all in at Marvel and DC for the most part. So when I would go and ask and say, hey, you got anything new I should read? It was kind of a rhetorical question in my mind. I mean, I was honestly hoping for an answer, but I wasn't really expecting one. Joe was able to answer that most weeks with some interesting stuff. One of the ones he picked, and man, he nailed it on this one, Pantheon from Lone Star Press. Ran for 13 issues, and there were some delays in those later issues. It has been collected in trade. It is basically, imagine that event title from a Marvel or DC universe, except it's its own universe, and it doesn't have that pesky little constraint of ongoing titles to worry about. So if stuff happens a little poorly for the heroes and a few of them, you know, don't make it or whatever, they can go there. So it had things that were analogous to Marvel and DC characters, but clever twists and tweaks on them. So you could see where the inspiration was, but it's not, oh, it's just this. Great stuff. I believe it was black and white. I don't know if they colored it for the trade or not. But man, this was just some great stuff. Very different sort of a take on that event comic that you just can't do at Marvel and DC outside of like a Injustice kind of a title. But you can do if the only thing in your narrative universe is this event title. So Pantheon from Lone Star Press, a lot of fun. Definitely recommend that. Now, from Dynamite Entertainment, I've got to recommend the Project Superpowers stuff. This is stuff that had Alex Ross attached. He was doing covers, character redesigns. They were taking a lot of public domain, Golden Age characters, breathing new life into them, and doing some just really good storytelling stuff. The Green Llama, The Flag, The Black Terror. We've seen some of these same characters over in some other titles and stuff. Definitely recommend the original Project Superpowers and Project Superpowers Chapter 2. Some of the later stuff, maybe not so much, but man, I was enjoying this because it was rare for me to have this deep world of superheroes that I just hadn't really encountered before. So man, I loved that and really recommend that. That was some great stuff back from, I think it was 2008-2009 from Dynamite. Now, one publisher that did this title and then just went away, much to my dismay, from either Do Gooder Press or Dork Storm's Press, it went by both, I think originally Dork Storm, then Do Gooder, starting in 2004, it's PS 238. Now, longtime listeners may remember me talking about this title. It's basically about a public school. Public School 238. Oh, geez, that sounds exciting, John. But hang on. It's not about what's happening in the school campus right there on the ground. It's what's happening at that special school deep hidden beneath it, where you've got the sons and daughters of superheroes and supervillains going to school. It is funny. It pokes fun at many of the cliche archetypes of superheroes and stuff. The, you know, who's the hero, who's the villain sort of things. The teachers are a lot of fun. It's a good all-ages title, centering around basically an elementary school for superpowered kids. Classic stuff, heartfelt. I was very disappointed when this thing went away after issue, I think, 49. I don't even think it made it to issue 50. There was a zero issue, so it did make it for 50 issues. But man, if this thing were still coming out, I'd still be getting it. Definitely recommend it. Now, as a fan of Tim Drake, I do have to mention the Red Robin title from 2009. Plus the Robin title from 1991, the Robin 2 title from 1991, the Robin 3 title from 1992, and the ongoing Robin title that went for, I think, 183 or so issues. So yeah, big fan of Tim Drake here. I'm hoping we get a Drake comic now that he's changed code names, but this just had some classic work, I think, by Chuck Dixon at times. I'm trying to think who the other writers were, and just a slew of great artists on this. This is, outside of Batman, I think one of the characters with the longest single run of a title in the Batman universe. I don't think Nightwing has chalked up 183 issues of a single title yet, or Catwoman, or anyone really other than Batman. So, highly recommend that. Definitely worth checking out. Now, a couple of years back, when I was going to Comic-Con, I worked with my co-host at the time. I think it was Drew at that point. It was 2016-ish. So yeah, I think it would have been Drew. We picked a couple of things, and one of the things we picked from Dynamite Entertainment was Red Team Double Tap Center Mass. This is a primetime police procedural in comic book format in all of the right ways. 9-issue limited series. It was well written. I really loved the art. There was a sense of acting to it. There was, again, it felt like a TV show on paper in all the right ways. I have since picked up the original Red Team 7-issue series from 2013 from Dynamite Entertainment. Have not read that yet. That is on the list of things to do for a back issue spotlight at some point. But man, really loved this. Those were one of those hidden gems that I just lucked into because we were looking for some stuff to review that we didn't normally read. Now, one of the other things from, I think, the following year, 2017, was Rivers of London Detective Stories. And this is based on a series of novels where you've got this investigator in London who basically winds up getting tapped by the small little branch that handles the supernatural, the weird, the wacky. And at first, a lot of people just don't believe in the stuff, but magic is real in this world. And he's now an apprentice to, you know, the head of this group, learning magic and solving crimes and stuff. This is a series of mini-series by Titan Comics, starting with Rivers of London, I think Black Mold or Night Witch. There's Bodywork, there's Cry Fox, there's Detective Stories, there's Waterweed. They've done a recent, quote-unquote, ongoing that lasted for 4 issues, and now they've got the Fae and the Furious going. I have picked up the e-book of the first Rivers of London novel. Have not read that yet. It is on the list to read. I think I've talked my sister into reading it as well, so we may talk about that on an episode in the future and stuff. But if you like crime procedural type stuff and you like supernatural, definitely worth checking this stuff out. I really like the art style too, and these comics are written by the author of the novels, so they tie into it pretty well as far as I know. Now, this next pick is one that I am basically sharing because it was shared with me on the yearly comic spotlight a couple of years back, Scooby-Doo Team-Up. It finished its run with 50 issues, and this is one that I hadn't been reading. Two or three people recommended it as the best of the year, I think 2 years ago now, on the yearly comic spotlight. And it's basically Scooby-Doo and the gang teaming up with either another cartoon character or like a Saturday morning version of classic DC characters from I'm trying to think who all they've teamed up with. Obviously Batman, The Flash, the Challengers of the Unknown, trying to think if they've done the Doom Patrol. They might have even done the Doom Patrol. They've done a ton, but they've also done Adamant. They've done other classic Hanna-Barbera Saturday morning cartoon characters. These are done digitally first, so you get a part one leading to a cliffhanger, and then a part two where they wrap up the mystery and stuff. It's very much got that Scooby-Doo sensibility with a little bit of a sardonic nod of, oh, let's put, you know, they make fun of the Scooby-Doo franchise as much as anything else, but not in a bad, annoying kind of a way. And as much as I loved when they would team up with some of the cartoon characters, man, I loved their Saturday morning kind of take on the JSA, the JLA, and tons of other DC characters. Definitely an all-ages book. It's a good book to get younger kids kind of introduced to some of the DC characters that you could then leverage them in later years into the mainstream books. Sorry that one ended. It ended with Crisis of Infinite Scoobies, where we got a ton of different Scooby-Doo and the gangs from the movies, the cartoons, etc. And man, it was just hilarious and really, really clever. Well done. Now, I'd mentioned one or two titles from back in the heyday of DC with like Freedom Fighters from 1976. I'm going to mention another title from DC in 1976, and that's the Secret Society of Supervillains. It ran for 15 issues. It too had a 16th and maybe 17th issue as part of the canceled Comics Cavalcade. May have been collected when this was done in trade. And they did do a trade of the Secret Society Supervillains back in 2013, which I picked up, I think, because they had those issues. Anyways, basically, imagine the superheroes getting organized, getting together, and trying to fight against the heroes and such. We got some great stuff. We got a little bit of the crime syndicate in there. We got, I'm trying to think who else. The Wizard, some of the lesser-used characters, and it was fun to see a villain team treated as villains Yet not just like always losing every week or every issue or whatever. Fun stuff. Again, late 70s, early 80s, fun time for DC. Definitely a title worth checking out. Now, we've talked crossovers and stuff like that on DC. We're at the secret area of the S's, so I gotta mention Secret Wars, particularly the original 12-issue run from 1985. I'll give honorable mention to the 2015 run of 9 issues. That was a lot of fun, too. Harken back to the original and a modern take on it. But man, that original 12-issue run, some classic stuff. I know Sam's also a big, big fan of it. We've talked about doing a back issue spotlight on that. It's just a matter of coordinating the schedules and doing that. But at some point, we'll make that happen. Now, another thing Marvel has done around the same time of Secret Wars in 1985 was Squadron Supreme. Now, it ran for 12 issues, and this was done by Mark Gruenwald, who I have tons of respect for. Met him a time or two at San Diego Comic-Con. He was one of us. He was a true geek. I think if he were alive today, if he weren't still working at Marvel, which I expect he would be, and I think we'd have a better Marvel for it, I think he'd either be doing a podcast or, man, he'd be on every podcast. Because, man, he loved talking comics. He really interacted well with the fans and just was a great guy. And this was one of his masterpieces. The Squadron Supreme, and this is not the Supreme Power version that J. Michael Straczynski did. This is I don't want to say the original version. The original version was done in the Avengers comics as kind of their version of an alternate Earth Justice League. Hyperion instead of Superman, Nighthawk instead of Batman, etc., etc. And they existed on this other Earth. Mark Gruenwald took that premise and basically did kind of the authority before the authority happened of what if the Justice League, in the form of the Squadron Supreme, decided to save the world. They'd get rid of hunger, they'd get rid of crime. Eh, if that meant brainwashing a few people, so be it. And it was a really, does absolute power corrupt or whatever? It was some fun stuff. It was classic 80s comics in all the right ways, and a very different look at the Justice League while balancing the heroic with a little bit of a darker take, but not like today's kind of a darker take. Definitely recommend this stuff. I've got the original 12 issues. I've got the trade. This is, I think, one of the forgotten gems of comics. Definitely worth checking out. In this area of the alphabet, I'm going to go back to the Marvel New Universe. I'm going to do a quick shout-out to Star Brand. This was basically their version of Green Lantern, if you will. A human gets marked with the Star Brand and has immense powers beyond belief. Ran for, I think, only 19 issues. I think it went bi-monthly at one point. I mentioned it as much because it was a good run, as it's current with some of the Avenger stuff going on today. Now, one of the other things that started as its own little side deal over at published through DC, not sure the ownership of these characters at the moment, but from Milestone in 1993, they did a bunch of comics set on this other world. They later crossed over with Superman family titles in, I want to say World's End, but I forget the crossover name. Anyways, Static was by far the best of the bunch, in my opinion. There was, I think, a four-season cartoon by it. The character has shown up in the Young Justice comics. He was briefly in the Titans. I don't know if DC has the rights to use the character or not, but man, I wish they would make more use of him in some way, shape, or form. I think the problem is, again, there's some issues as to who owns what rights for Milestone and who can do what with the characters. But man, that 45-issue run of Static to begin with, it was, you know, a 1993 modern take on kind of a Spider-Man-ish mindset character. He had electrical powers versus spider powers, but he was a geek. He was trying to do the right things. He had the quips. He was fun. Definitely recommend Static. Now, I haven't mentioned really any Superman titles yet to speak of, so I want to mention three titles, a 4-issue miniseries, another 4-issue miniseries, and a 12-issue miniseries, all of these by John Byrne. It's the Superman-Batman Generations from 1994, Superman-Batman Generations 2 from 2001, and Superman-Batman Generations 3 from 2003. This is what if the characters started out in, I think, the 30s and then aged in real time, and he jumps forward decades and stuff. So you get to see how Superman and Batman age, what happens to their kids, their grandkids, and their legacy over the years. And in that final one, he manages to kind of circle back in a fairly clever way. I haven't read this stuff in ages. It's on the list to reread because I really enjoyed it. I think it was some of John Byrne's better stuff and therefore had to recommend it. Now, I talked about Project Superpowers and some of those Golden Age characters of the Green Llama, the Black Terror, the Flag, and those characters. Another take on those characters from America's Best Comics is in Terra Obscura. This came out in 2003, and I think there was another series the following year. 6-issue run, basically modern-day take on these characters. It goes in a different direction, obviously, from Project Superpowers. Matter of fact, I think it might have even been a year or two or three years before Project Superpowers. It was fun stuff, and again, these are some cool characters with a modern take on them. So for me, it was really an introduction to some of these characters. Definitely recommend that stuff. Really, a lot of America's Best Comics, which had originally been through Wildstorm, but then got into the DC publishing arm when they bought Wildstorm. Definitely worth checking out. Now, one classic title that ran for, I think, 174 issues, although I'm going to discount some of them, that started in 1997 for Marvel, Thunderbolts. Now, this was starting when the Heroes Reborn titles were happening. So you had the Avengers, the Fantastic Four, Hulk, Iron Man, maybe one or two other characters, Thor, I think, kicked off to this side universe because they had outsourced those characters to Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld, among others. Back in the mainstream Marvel universe, you had this void of heroes. In comes the Thunderbolts. They're the heroes for a new age. You know, Justice like Lightning, they're going to come save the day. And brilliant first issue. There was a nice twist at the end of it that I didn't see coming. And it kept this title rolling with some revelations over the years and some twists in direction, a couple of new characters getting added later, like Hawkeye and such. And it was a fun, different look at the superhero kind of genre. What it means to be a hero was central to it. After a while, they did a continuation of the title, but a very different, it wasn't the same property. I think it was like Wrestlers or something like that, so I'm not counting those, but still. It went for a really long time, started out with Kurt Busiek, highly recommend starting with that run and going for as long as it entertains you. We talked a minute ago about Terra Obscura from America's Best Comics. Tom Strong ran for 36 issues from America's Best Comics starting in 1999. Definitely worth checking out too. Science Adventure Team, think kind of Doc Savage meets Fantastic Four, I guess would be a high concept for it. Now, in 2006, the DC Universe was in kind of an interesting place. Captain Marvel Shazam had been taken out of play. I forget if he'd retired, if he'd become the Wizard, or exactly what had happened with him. There was a vacancy for the power, so Captain Marvel Jr., Freddie Freeman, undergoes the Trials of Shazam for 12 issues to get the powers. It's one of the best Shazam titles, shy of Powers of Shazam. It really was working to redefine where this character in this franchise could go in the DC universe. Alas, you know, a couple of years later came the New 52 and totally derailed stuff, but definitely a good run and worth reading the 12 issues. And it too, no doubt, has been collected in trade. Jumping over to the indies again for a moment over at Dark Horse, originally now over at IDW, is Usagi Yojimbo. I got on board with that late, around issue 117. I've since picked up all the trades and stuff like that, so I've got all the original stuff, just haven't read it yet. Stan Sakai and his Ronin Rabbit has been going strong for decades and is just some great storytelling. It's takes place in you know, ancient Japan. So there's some cool stuff. You get to learn about that kind of society, that culture, and it's a good kind of all-ages book. It's got a little bit of, you know, there's fights, there's death, but it's not horrific in any way, shape, or form. But it's definitely, I think, a classic in comics. It's worth checking out if you haven't already. I knew about it back in the 90s, but did not check it out. Matter of fact, I knew about it, man, I want to say I knew about it in the 80s. Maybe You know what? I'm not thinking about, because it was the Dark Horse run that may have started in 96. It was the Fantagraphics run before it that would have started earlier. I knew about it around 1986, 87. A friend of mine in high school had mentioned it. There are a handful of recommendations I wish I would have actually listened to, or they'd done a better sell job, whatever, that I'd started picking up when I first heard about them. That's one of them. Classic stuff. Stan Sakai is a master at the craft. Well worth checking out. Now we're down in this area of the alphabet, so hitting the W's. Gotta mention Walking Dead. I don't do horror. I don't do zombies. This was a brilliant book. Ran for 193 issues. I got on board late. Did a, I think it was a back issue spotlight where I had read the first trade or two. Got hooked. Found a lot of the earlier issues, starting with issue 7 forward. So I've got from 7 forward in my collection and have been reading it, you know, ever since I got on board. And that was around issue, I want to say 40-ish or so, I forget. But definitely, that's another one that I wish I'd gotten on board with earlier. I'd heard about it early on from the comic shop I was shopping at, but the sales pitch was, I read it. Well, that's great. Why should I? So they failed to sell me on the title, but I got on board later anyways. Now, one that was a similar thing that a co-worker at the comic shop I'd worked at in San Diego suburbs, big fan of. It took me a while to get on board, but man, when I did, I saw what he loved about it. Later picked up the entire run, Warlord from 1976. That's, what, three different titles from 1976 DC that I've mentioned? Good year for them. DC implosion didn't help, but this ran for 133 issues, six annuals. Travis Morgan, Air Force pilot, crashes and winds up in Skartaris, which is kind of DC's version of the Savage Land. It's arguably inside the Earth or whatever, so there's only a few ways to get to it. It is a magical world with, you know, ancient animals and stuff like that. It's a dangerous place, and time works kind of funny there. This is a adventure sort of a story, and I'm a capes and cowls superhero kind of a guy, so this is not really in my wheelhouse, but man, they did some great storytelling and great art. Ron Randall was on it for a while. I'm trying to think who else. I'm thinking it might have been Mike Grell who started it, but I could be wrong on that. But man, classic stuff. This is one that at one point I read through the entire 133-issue run. I think that was when I had picked everything up and we were going to review a later revival of the series. But yeah, I read the whole thing. Man, classic stuff. It fills a long box in and of itself and is a good use to put that long box to. Down in this area of the alphabet and the W's, gotta mention the West Coast Avengers. Classic stuff with Hawkeye, Mockingbird, The Thing, Dr. Pym, Tigra, Wonder Man, Moon Knight for a while, bunch of other characters. And it's an Avengers title, but it's on the other coast, so it's disconnected from some of that stuff, has its own flavor and whatnot. Later got renamed to Avengers West Coast. I think John Byrne worked on it for a bit at that point. Fun run, definitely worth checking out, and I've got some definite fond memories of that. Now we're getting to the end of the alphabet, so as we hit the Z's, I have got to mention one of the classic indie comics that most people know the author not from this, but from his later books. It's Zot from 1984 from Eclipse, done by Scott McCloud, who later wrote Understanding Comics, Making Comics, and Reinventing Comics, seminal books on the comic format and storytelling. This was one of his kind of classic comics early on, ran for 36 issues, and was some great fun stuff. If you've read those books and want to see some of his early work, definitely worth doing that. If you just want a really good kind of sci-fi action-adventure book, worth checking out. And certainly if you have not read his books, everyone I think really should at some point read Understanding Comics. If you're interested in making comics, that book is worth reading. And then Reinventing is kind of where comics could go in the modern digital age. But definitely, all three books are good reads, but Understanding Comics really changed how I thought about comics and stuff at the time. So that gets us through the alphabet. I know I've been going on for a while, but hey, I wanted to recommend some stuff. There are a few other things, three other things I want to touch on because I really couldn't find a good spot to put them. I suppose I could have put them alphabetically, but you know, hey, that's too easy. There are a couple of epic runs by a few creators I want to talk about, specifically Peter David. He did some great stuff on Aquaman, specifically the 1994 run that ran for about 75 issues, and he did a lot of that. This is when you got the hook in place of the hand for a while. You got a lot of the Atlantean mythology kind of built up. He really redefined Aquaman in the 90s. Also in the 90s, he defined Young Justice. This is when we got Robin, Tim Drake, Superboy, Connor Kent, and Impulse, Bart Allen. As a team, we then get Wonder Girl, Secret, Arrowette. I'm trying to think of some of the other early Young Justice characters. Loose art style, fun action book, young characters. It reads like young characters should. Great, fun kind of a thing. And you can see how that kind of spawned a very different take for the Young Justice cartoon, but also the current Young Justice book that Bendis is working on. So if you haven't read those things, and of course, Peter David had an epic run on the Hulk. He's had X-Factor, Star Trek, tons of stuff by Peter David worth checking out. The other creator I really want to give a shout out to, because I loved his work, Roy Thomas really defined the Earth 2 continuity and characters in the 80s with All-Star Squadron, with Young All-Stars. He did some work on, he did Infinity Inc., which is the modern day title and such. He even had those titles kind of withstand the demise of Earth 2 and the collapse of the multiverse, which really shook up these Earth 2 characters quite a bit, because some of them no longer existed. This gave us Young All-Stars, and he just did some great stuff with the Earth 2 characters, so I felt I really had to give him a shout-out. I love those characters and his take on them. He's also done a ton of stuff. I think he did the Invaders over at Marvel. He does a lot of World War II era stuff. He also did an independent title. I forget the name of it, but it was a similar feel to it. I should have pulled that out when I went through my list. Oh well. But I wanted to give those two a shout out. And then finally, I've got one kind of thematic shout out. I love reference titles. Who's Who, Official Handbook of the Marvel Universe, the various secret files that DC has done. There are also a couple of both comics and actual books that have been done for Marvel and DC that are indexes of the Legion of Superheroes, the Justice League, the X-Men, the Avengers, stuff like that. And if you're trying to do some research, when did a character first show up or what happened with the story afterwards, those are great go-to references. Not necessarily the most exciting reads, but in terms of condensed information at your fingertips, definitely worth checking out if you're into that kind of stuff. At the very least, I like things like the Who's Who and the Official Marvel Handbook, just for the costume references and synopsis of the then-current history of the characters. So, I don't often do this kind of, here's what I recommend reading sort of a thing. I think given the length of how I've been going, I think you realize why I don't do that. It took a while to go through the literally, I think, 8 or 9,000 titles I've got across my 60, 70,000 comic collection or whatever, to pull out some stuff that were some highlights and just kind of give you guys some thoughts as to what you might want to think about checking out the next time you're either on a website looking at back issues or at a comic store or just wondering, what should I read? Maybe you've got some of the stuff sitting on your shelf already. If so, again, there's tons and tons of things to read. Now, the reason we did this format again was because I needed to get this episode in the can before February even started, before the February previews is out. I am actually recording this on the 25th of January, trying to get some stuff done early. It's obviously not going to go up until February. We usually do one clip per pick based on items that are in the current previews. We go through them in the order they show up in previews. We're going back to that format next month. Please send in clips. The deadline for that is going to be March 7th, that Saturday morning, bright and early. And by bright and early, it really comes down to how early I get up and start working on the episode. If you ever need a little more time and you've got some clips you want to put in, just shoot me a message either on our Slack channel or shoot me an email. I can usually kind of finagle giving a little extra time for some people. It's not that big of a deal if I know the stuff is coming. In this case, again, had to get it done early. Now, there are going to be other points in the future where I may need to do an early episode. So if you've got thoughts on a riff on this kind of a recommendation format episode for the next time I need to do something like that, by all means, let me know. I am open to ideas. I think it's fun to give people a chance to recommend things. It's a great way for us to learn what everyone else is reading, what they're enjoying, why they're enjoying it, and what else we should be checking out. So with that, we'll call it an episode.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.